Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you from a chilly Pueblo, Colorado, on this 10th day of March, 2009. We have a great show today, folks, because psychologist Dr. Howard Gluss is our special guest. He's the co-author of Real People, that's R-E-E-L, Real People, Finding Ourselves in the Movies, a wonderful book about the psychology behind a variety of film character types. He's also a movie addict, which means he's a perfect fit for our show. But before hearing from Dr. Gluss, let's see if Jazz Shaw, my excellent co-host, is ready to get things rolling. Jazz, since Nikki Starr can't be with us today, are you willing to help with the chat as well as co-host?
Well, I'm as ready as I could ever possibly be, Betty Jo, and I'll never do as good of a job as Nikki, but actually I saw her stick her head in a little while ago, so we may have some help there too, but yeah, we're ready to go, and we have quite the crowd on hand for Dr. Gluss.
Great, and thanks so much for helping out here, Jazz, and also thanks to our chatters for signing in. As you know, we really appreciate their participation. Jazz, are you ready to find out more about Dr. Gluss and his fascinating book?
I sure am. I'd like to know more about Dr. Gluss than I would like to know about me as a movie watcher. It's kind of a frightening topic.
It is, but I want to hear more, too. So let's say hello to our guest right now. Dr. Gluss, congratulations on your terrific book, and welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters.
Well, thank you very much, Betty. I really appreciate you having me on. And, you know, as I was listening to you, I was thinking that we probably should come up with a new diagnosis for your movie addicts. I don't know if that's clinically diagnosable yet.
Well, if anybody can diagnose it, you can, and let us know as soon as you do. I'm always delighted when another movie addict joins us, and I knew that you were a kindred spirit. We're getting a little bit of feedback here. I'm wondering now. I think everything is okay now, but I had to tell you that I knew that you were a movie addict when I read that little confession that you made in the first section of your book. I have to read it for our listeners.
I appreciate it.
This is what Dr. Gluss wrote, quote, "I am in love with the movies. This love is neither a teenage angst nor a fond yearning love. It is a lustful indulgence. It's the type of love that is blind and foolhardy, the type of love that forgives the bruising mistakes, bad intentions, shabby behavior, and sees only good in the object of affection," unquote. Wow, that should be the mantra for all movie addicts.
I remember writing that, Betty, and what I was thinking about, because being a psychologist, people always assume that there's a certain kind of movie that I would like that, you know, it would be an intellectual type of movie or maybe a film noir. And my feeling about it is that I love all types of movies, that I love to be entertained. And, and movies just take me to another place. And that's what I love about that, that they bring out so many different parts of my personality.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's why I love movies so much too, Howard. And I wanted to mention that in addition to your doctorate in psychology, you also hold dual degrees in drama and communication studies, and that's very impressive and a wonderful combination. But, Jazz, do you have a question about Dr. Gless's background?
Well, yeah, not just about the background, but in terms of watching movies, the subject matter you write on, it just seems like you have to overanalyze everything, and I'm curious, does that affect your ability to enjoy movies when you watch them because you're spending time kind of looking, you know, through the fourth wall, looking behind the doors and things? Does it stop you from just being able to sit back and just have a good time?
Not at all. I find that when I'm in, I actually don't really think too much about the movies after I see them. When I'm sitting in a movie, I really just try to lose myself in the emotional experience of the movie and then go back later on and think about what I saw. And that brings up an important point, which Betty has asked me many times, is what I feel to be authentic. And I feel when I can really connect to what's happening, either story-wise or character-wise on the screen, I am lost in the picture, I am lost in the film, and it doesn't bring me out of it. If I start getting really lost, then I start thinking I'm disconnecting, probably the connecting in the same way. And then maybe I start to think about it afterwards.
I know what you mean, Howard. My background is also in psychology, and I do think that it helps me understand the motivation of film characters, and so I can do a better job writing film reviews. But I've kind of taken a note from your book. I don't take notes during the movies anymore. When I first started writing about them, that's what I did, but it interfered with my total enjoyment. So I do the same thing you do. I wait until after I see the movie to think about it. I just like to experience it. And, you know, while reading your book, I really admired the way you list various character types. Let's see, I think there's, I'll probably miss some, but the histrionic, the antisocial, the paranoid, the obsessive compulsive, the masochistic.
Well, can I tell you how that came about?
Please do.
Yeah, I was, those personality characterizations are based on the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health, which shrinks use to diagnose patients.
Yes.
And what happened is I was teaching a class in a graduate school for training therapists, and the class was on personality disorders. And after a while, other students from other disciplines started to come by, especially film students and actors and directors. And it became the running joke in the class, oh, if you're diagnosing this person, or if you're treating this person, or if you're acting this person, this is some of the characteristics you may look for. And a student was the one who suggested that I write the book, and the book that we're talking about is called Real People. And what he had said was it was such a great help for him in developing characterizations based on these psychological, character types that we use.
Yeah.
So that's what I tried to do in the book is talk about the history of the character, give film examples, what their trials are like, and really as a point to allow people to be creative. And I mentioned that in the introduction. It's not a cookbook type of book. I really want to spark people's creativity and imagination and give them a baseline to work from.
Dr. Gless, I'm curious about the personality type thing. Do you think that people look for their own personality type in films that they give approval to, as in looking for something they're comfortable with, or do you think people look for an anti-hero? Do they look for the bad boy if they're a good conservative person?
I think there's a lot of that. That's what I love about the movie. We vicariously get to experience different aspects of ourselves. So, like you said, if you're a very conservative type, you want to write a script that's about an antisocial character or someone who's very deviant and explore that part of your psyche. But my experience has been, as I teach these workshops, that the darker the character, the better the attendance.
Right. We love to see the darker characters. And I was especially interested in the characters that you chose in your book to sort of analyze for us, like Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard and Gordon Gekko in Wall Street and Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs. And it was just a real treat for me to see the characters that you chose, and I'm kind of wondering why you chose the ones that you did to illustrate the various character types.
Well, what I tried to do is, and let me mention, you know, I did a workshop on serial killers, and it was so well attended, and I realized, and that's when I realized that people really love to explore these darker sides of people. But when I chose the main characters for each personality disorder, I tried to choose someone who illustrated most of the characteristics. Nobody ever has all the characteristics, but it was a combination of they had the characteristics, the actor or writer or director really developed the character with such depth and authenticity that it's almost beyond analyzation. You know, the actors really inhabited those parts. So that's
I
gotta
start watching those slasher films. Jeez.
But, like, for example, Betty and I had talked about this, and we both really loved Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. And I was explaining to her why I thought he was such a great antisocial character, which is a personality disorder. He used to be called, let's say, a psychopath in the old psychiatric literature.
We're talking about the Joker?
Him playing the Joker.
Yeah.
What I loved about it, and really I thought was so great, was his authenticity came from a place of, for those type of characters, it's the game that is really the most important aspect. It's not necessarily about the money. And remember there's this great scene where he burns all the money?
Yes.
And the other criminals can't understand why. And to me, that was such a brilliant choice because it really said that's what's so true and so scary about an antisocial character, a psychopath, that they just love playing the game.
Yes.
Love playing, manipulating people. It's all about that.
So we really do, as moviegoers, enjoy watching those characters play out the game. And you have another type of character that if I remember correctly, you mentioned in your book is quite popular in the movies, and that's the histrionic.
Yes, and you know, the histrionic is your, you know, basically pretty self-centered, narcissistic, hysterical type of person. And I was thinking of Penelope Cruz in Vicky Cristina Barcelona was a great example of that personality. With all her histrionics and her hystericalness, what makes her different than, let's say, a Norma Desmond, who's a more narcissistic character, is she really wants love, and she really wants attention, and she wants attention because she really desires love. In some ways, that's what makes her such an endearing character. And that's why we empathize and we share fear and anxiety.
That's a very good example. And what about the masochistic type?
The masochistic type, I mentioned a little bit in my book, there's a quick reference to Rick in Casablanca, but it's really about the self-defeating, self-loathing type of character that really underneath it all is harboring a lot of self-hatred or a lot of anger and resentment. So the main thing people get from reading these personality disorders or personality styles, as I like to call them, is there's an underlining baseline from which each character tends to come from, and all decisions are made from that place. And depending on how severe or how disordered the character is, that's even more how they're caught in that place. For example, you know, Norma Desmond, it's always about her.
Right.
And every
definitely.
Decision comes from that narcissistic place.
And she's ready for her close-up.
All the time.
Right.
And we all know people like that.
not to mention any names.
Right. And the thing that's so wonderful about her is, and what I love about the portrayal is, you really see how that plays out in her life, and all decisions come from that initial place. Where, like, the antisocial character, the initial It's about power, and it's about playing the game, and it's about manipulation.
Right.
Dr. Glass, what's the most popular genre of film, in your opinion, and what does that say about the movie viewers? What are we attracted to the most? Like romantic comedies and romance movies, love stories always seem to be very popular. Does that say something about the viewing audience?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that especially during these different times, let's say economically, people so much want to connect to other people and have such a difficult time doing that. I don't remember this verbatim, but there's a great quote by in Our Town when he says, whenever we deal with the humans, we always deal with a bunch of stuff that gets in the way.
Right.
And I think romantic comedies, and I also think to agree with what you had said, that I think people love to go to the movies to, obviously to be entertained, but also to explore other parts of their psyche. And a lot of times that's why slasher movies or antisocial movies are so popular, because we vicariously get to explore that side of ourselves.
Ooh.
And I know, and I certainly agree with that. And I was very pleased that you place so much importance on authentic performances, because I think that's the key. How do you describe an authentic performance?
Well, I think I remember what sparked this book is, you know, I go to a ton of movies and I see millions and millions of dollars being spent on special effects, which are great. I enjoy the ride and I enjoy the experience. But a lot of times it was at the expense of character. And ultimately, I think what people react to when they watch movies is the human experience. And when I think of authenticity, I think of what's really real for that person, what they're really experiencing. And how I think, for example, an antisocial character may not have a tremendously empathetic response to another type of character or a narcissist. If they do, it's always because there's an angle or something they want to get from that person.
Right.
But it wouldn't necessarily be out of genuine care and love.
Well, when you talk about authentic performances in that terms, just to bring us up to date, you know, with the,
sure,
the current what's going on in the cinema, the Oscars this year. Could you grab something out of the air that you feel is a really authentic performance from the Oscar nominees this year?
Sure, I can. Well, I mentioned Penelope Cruz, which I thought was great, and Heath Ledger, and Meryl Streep in Doubt, I thought was a tremendous performance. Because I think one of the things she can do as an actress is she tends to really get to the heart of the issue. And I saw the struggle in her character and this want to find truth. And I think she kept coming from that place. And you know, in that film, everybody at some point doubts each other and themselves.
Well, I'm glad.
What do you think about the winners this year?
What do I think about the winners?
Yeah, just getting off the psychology
topic
for a moment, but how'd you like the outcome?
I loved it. You know, I Betty Jo and I had talked about it. I thought this was great. So, excuse me?
Sorry, we had a little break up there for a second. Go ahead.
Okay. I thought this was a great year for film. I loved all the, you know, in the best actor category, I thought Sean Penn really transcended himself and showed his ability to play the complexity of the character in Milk, which was, you know, such an interesting characterization. You really got a sense that it was coming from a real place inside of him. Whatever that issue was, he sort of transcended everything else. I thought that Frank Langella did the same in Frost Nixon. I didn't get to see The Wrestler, but I thought so many of the performances were so powerful, and the same for the women, you know, Kate Winslet, you know, and Meryl Streep. I just thought it was a great year for actors.
Yeah, Frank Langella was wonderful to see him getting recognized again after such a long career and such a variety of roles.
Well,
and, you know, such a long history as an acting teacher, too. He's brought so many actors into their own. I don't know if people are aware of that.
Yes, and I really like some of the things that you've said about the Oscar nominees and the winners, but you know, we have disagreed on Meryl Streep and on Frank Langella before, so, and Jazz kind of knows my opinions on this too, but I would rather have seen Meryl Streep nominated for Mamma Mia than for Doubt, because I thought she completely transformed herself into that worried mother, single mother, and in Doubt, I sensed that she was acting, and in my definition of an authentic performance, I don't see the actors acting. I just see them as the as that person that they're portraying, and it was the same with Frank Langella. But I'm always looking for that authentic performance. You said it in your book, the way the actor or actress just becomes the person that they're playing, and they just seem so real and so genuine that you forget that this is, say, Angelina Jolie, or that it's Meryl Streep, and all you see.
Angelina Jolie, I thought, was brilliant in Changeling.
I did too, and she was. I liked her, and I did like Kate Winslet in The Reader. I did forget that those were, you know, that was Angelina Jolie and that was Kate Winslet. But those authentic performances are marvelous to see.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of comments in the chat, actually, about some of the ones you're talking about, particularly Kate Winslet. One would hope that she's not really like the person she was portraying, so there's a lot of acting going on there for somebody who's such a irredeemably evil person in the background of their life, and you know, but you have to pull that role off convincingly, and she was recognized for it.
Yes, and she did a marvelous job.
Let me comment on that quickly. What the book is designed to do is to just give people a way to research the characters and find that connection within themselves. For example, with Kate Winslet, I don't think that an actor goes after something thinking they're an evil person. I think that's a judgment we put on them. They go after an objective for very specific reason. And I think she probably is able to tap into that side of herself that we all have.
Well, that ties into the next thing I wanted to ask you, Dr. Gluss. What in your book would you say is, what are the tools that you're bringing to people who are going to be in the industry that'll help them work more effectively, particularly in something that might be difficult to them in their, you know, from their natural personality?
Well, I think the way the book is broken up is there's the different personality styles, and I pick three major films for each, and then I go through all the different characteristics that personality style may have. And then I give a lot of cinematic examples, so if they're researching a character, they can go and understand how a concept that's portrayed clinically shows up on the screen, and they can get sort of a real-life example of it. And if the book is set up like an intake, in other words, this is what a psychologist uses when he first meets a patient to analyze a patient, to figure out what's going on for that patient, what course of action to take. I try to do the same for artists. And then the next level of the book, the unconscious level, is I'm hoping when people read it, they'll find one or two associations within their own life or memories or feelings that come up, and they'll be able to integrate that into their work and really personalize it. So I like to call it above and below the line work. The below the line work is unconscious. The above the line work is a very, you know, structured approach to developing character.
I think it's just a really invaluable tool for anyone who wants to understand film characters. And I really think that actors should, you know, when they're assigned a role, sometimes they're asked to develop a whole bio about the character that they're playing, you know, what's happened to them up to that point that isn't covered in the script. And an actor can go to your book and get just, you know, wonderful information about what their character's background might be. And then I think it does the same thing for writers and directors and producers. So you really should be commended for writing this book. I just am very, very thankful that I have a copy, and I urge our listeners who are interested in the subject to click on the cover of Real People on our Movie Addict Headquarters site, and that will take you right over to Amazon.com, where you can buy a copy of the book. And since the title of the book, Dr. Gless, is Real People Finding Ourselves in the Movies, how do you think movie actors help us find ourselves in the roles they play?
I think that if we want a film, let's say we sit in the movie theater, we sit in the quiet of the theater. Me, and this was what was fascinating for me in researching this book, is I think the interior of a movie, the way the frame is set up, the dark theater, the quietness, it allows us to get into, almost get into this meditative place. It reminded me a lot of what happens to patients when they come into the office of a therapist.
Yeah.
The office is set. Go ahead.
I think that's right.
I think the office is set up in a very similar way, and I saw so many parallels between the two experiences. And by watching a film, especially if it's a good film, story-wise, character-wise, it allows someone to relax enough into themselves that I know, as I watch people in a movie theater, everybody's processing their own material in their own life as they watch, let's say, a character go through a certain experience, even if it's a romantic comedy. And you know, I just want to make this clear. I'm definitely not against entertainment.
No, I'm so glad.
It's all clinical, but you know, in Harry Met Sally, I remember when I was dating, I just watched that film over and over again, thinking about, oh, okay, this is all the obstacles. But it took them like 11 or 12 years to just have their first date, basically.
Right.
No, and we watched them struggle. We watched, and it reminded me of my own experience. So I learned a lot, and it brought up my own thoughts about what was going on at the time.
That's a very, very good example. And two of my favorite examples are watching Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz and Jimmy Stewart in Vertigo, because every time I watch The Wizard of Oz and see Judy, it helps me understand why I've always had such a deep longing for home. And then Jimmy Stewart helped me know how dangerous an overpowering obsession can be. And there are just, oh, and then what about the two guys in The Shawshank Redemption?
Sure.
Tim Robbins and was it Morgan Freeman?
Right, Morgan Freeman, right.
And my goodness, did I ever get more admiration for the virtue of patience, because look how long it took them, just in the same situation in terms of what you mentioned when Harry met Sally, that, you know, you just have to be patient. So we get some of these values in that help us live our own lives, and we do find ourselves in the movies. But
and for actors, that's probably that's a whole other experience, which I wanted to ask the doctor about in terms of what they could take from his book. You mentioned Vertigo. A recent interview that I was watching, although it was a replay of a very old one, Hitchcock loved directing Jimmy Stewart because he took him out of his comfort zone from the roles we were used to seeing Jimmy Stewart in as the eternal good guy, the nice fellow in Harvey and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and he put him in Vertigo and some other roles where he was this flawed character that had these real deficiencies, or like in Rear Window where he's in a cast for the entire film and he's helpless to do the heroic things. In the course of writing this book, Doctor, you know, is it a big challenge for an actor to go from one mode where the fans are used to seeing you and perhaps where you're comfortable to then go and portray something entirely new and then make the audience be receptive to that?
I think it depends on the actor and the actor's desire for that. I think really good actors love the challenge of getting into different aspects of their persona. You know, I was, as you were saying it, I was thinking of Robert Downey Jr. And, you know, the vast number of different character types that he plays. I mean, in Tropic Thunder, playing an actor, you know, playing himself, playing an actor, and being a comedian and you know, his dramatic roles. There's an example of him being able to explore these different parts of his psyche. And I think it's tremendously valuable. I also wanted to mention on the other side, a lot of times when I'm working with patients, I will recommend different films for them to see, to explore different psychological aspects of themselves or issues they may be facing.
That must be called cinema therapy.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it is, because a lot of times by having something external, it gives us something to talk about, and then we have a common ground.
Yes, I thought that would be the kind of therapist I would want to go to.
Except I have a feeling that when you would go, you'd be talking about movies so much.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
I'm so curious to find out, Dr. Gless, who are your favorite film actors and actresses?
Well, I want to mention one of the things when you said about, your experience with Judy Garland. I think one of the inspirations that that turned me into a psychologist was growing up with Woody Allen films. Because I, being Jewish and being from a big city and experiencing a lot of the same neurosis, I really could connect to him, especially his earlier movies. And it was just like, I don't know, it was just such a parallel experience for me. So I learned so much about who I was through his movies.
Well, that ties into one of the earlier questions we asked you. I'd like to circle back and revisit that just for a moment if we have the time.
I'll answer Betty's question also about favorite actors, but go ahead.
But do we as a society, as an audience, consumers of film, do we look, do you think, more for things that make us comfortable or things that challenge us? I mean, what produces a popular film in terms of the roles that are portrayed by the actors? I mean, you talked about, well, I'm a Jewish person and I'm watching, these films and I could relate to that. Is there that comfort level? Is that what we seek out? Or is it a diversion? Because we talk about going to see films because we want to have a diversion from real life. We don't want to be reminded of real life. We want to be entertained and get into a fantasy world. Do we want something different, or do we want to see ourselves up there?
I think that, first of all, I think people go to movies for different reasons, depending on the mood they're in or what they're trying to experience. But as a generalization, I would go with the thought that we go to movies to be challenged, explore different parts of ourselves, to want to laugh at things that we don't normally laugh at. I think that's, people love going to slasher movies just like people stop their car and look at accidents on the street. It explores something, fascinates them. But I think that what makes a movie good is it has to challenge us, but it has to be enough in our comfort zone that we could relate to it. If it's so far removed, then we can't really connect to what's going on screen.
Good answer.
That's my bit.
Very good.
Thank you.
Agree with you. And what about your favorite film actors and actresses?
Okay. Well, I was thinking about that. With the women, I obviously, Meryl Streep in my mind can do no wrong.
She could do no wrong in Mamma Mia, that's for sure, and in The Devil Wears Prada. So that's a good choice.
Okay. The chat room's not really some Jeff slitting Glenn. Of wrists going on every time we mention Mamma Mia, but let's move on.
I know. And, I won't tell you my feelings about Mamma Mia.
Oh, you could. You go ahead, Dr. Gless.
Well, I was on a cruise ship over Christmas sitting outside and over the stars, watching Mamma Mia at a midnight showing, and I wasn't too crazy. I'll be polite. I didn't really connect.
A lot of people did.
I fell asleep.
Mostly men, but go ahead. All right. So now you've stated.
Okay, well,
what other actress and actor would be in your list of favorites?
I think I like different people for different reasons why I'm attracted. I think that I love Meryl Streep's ability to play a character and lose herself in a part. And she seems to me to be able to really communicate her feelings in a very primal way, in a very direct way. I love Jessica Lange's intensity and her sexuality on the screen. she really seems to just pop out of the screen every time I see her. Dame Judi Dench, in my mind, can do no wrong. She's such a commanding actress. And, tremendous experience of her. And someone who I think is really remarkable and underrated, I think Cher is a great actress.
Oh, Cher in Moonstruck.
Yeah, I just think she's great and would love to see her act more in films. On the men's side, Anthony Hopkins to me is, you know, a consummate, again, for the same reasons as Meryl Streep, I think he's just able to lose himself in character and make me forget that I'm watching an actor. I love Jack Nicholson because there's always a mystery. I'm always wondering what he's really thinking. I mean, there's always a mystery to me about him whenever he performs, and I find that fascinating. I love Robert Downey.
One of my all-time favorites, for sure. Yes.
Nicholson.
Yes.
Yeah, and I love Robert Downey Jr. I think he's an incredible actor, and I think he brings so much of himself to the screen. I love Ed Norton for the same reason.
Excellent choices. I go along with you on those, and I have to say that I'm getting to be more and more a fan of Meryl Streep's, too. So.
Oh, okay.
How about the films themselves, Dr. Bless? Because the films are always more than a sum of their parts and just the actors, as everybody that works in the industry knows. What are your favorite films in terms of stories that speak to people, that they connect with? What are the best films?
Well, you know, why don't we talk about this year's films that were nominated, because I thought that the stories in them were really interesting. I mean, you know, Slumdog Millionaire, a fascinating culturally, just to experience a culture that I'm not familiar with and see the struggle, the human struggle of that these kids are and the poor people were facing in India, and how so many of us can relate to that need to just persevere and move forward in our lives and not give in to our circumstances. And in a way, Milk did the same thing. You know, it allowed for a minority to be portrayed in a specific way. And we saw the struggle of Harvey Milk to really give meaning to his life. I love the opening line. He said, I'm 40 years old and I feel like I've done nothing with my life. And then he finds something that he really connects to. And I think that's so important for people to find within their lives, something deep within them that they can really connect to. And in Frost Nixon, one of the things I loved, again, about the human experience is we did see the conflict. We did see Nixon's conflict. And I thought, frankly, irregardless of the opinion, but I thought he was able to show the internal conflict of what Nixon was going through. And, you know, these are things that people really deal with on their daily life. And I think, you know, as they see other people doing it in different circumstances, they could really relate to it. So those three films for me this year really stood out.
Those are very interesting choices and great reasons for choosing them. Jazz, are there any questions or reactions from the chatters that you'd like to share with Dr. Glass? Because we're getting close to closing time.
Yes, we are, and we're getting a little bit of feedback right now. We'll try to cut that down. There's been a lot of reactions to the various films that were mentioned and to the actors and actresses. Questions on both sides, really. And one of them that I wanted to bring up was that there was a lot of controversy about Frost Nixon because Frank Langella played such a controversial character. And there were sides to that where you almost wanted to be sympathetic to the character, but other sides where you're just thinking like, oh, well, this is a terrible person. So, you know, is that appealing to the audience? I'm trying to compile a few different comments that were made here, but, you know, is it hard to try to display someone as a sympathetic character but at the same time as a villain?
I think it's hard, and I thought that that film was able to really do that in a really great way, because if you really look at it, other than in slasher films, very few people are purely evil or purely good. I think most people are pretty complex. And, what was it, as Frank Langella's walking out of the interview where he at the end of the film, he goes up to this dog and pets this dog, and you see the soft side of him. So I think, given where we're at in the world, that this is a really good thing to show cinematically, because things are very complex, and we deal with complex people and complex issues, and wouldn't be they're all good or all bad.
Okay, I really didn't want to do this, but it's been coming up in the chat, and I just have to say I'm on board with you in the same side opposed from Betty Jo with Mamma Mia. But is that some
Jazz, I told you that nobody's perfect.
Is that a cultural reference, Dr. Gluss? I mean, is the Mamma Mia music that goes back to a bygone age, I mean, is that something people are just thinking back fondly on old times, even though the performances may have been, well, I'll stop there.
What was the question?
Are people looking back fondly, looking for, like, nostalgia in a movie like Mamma Mia?
Yeah, I think that, to me, the issue was more storytelling and production. It wasn't really about the music. I just didn't really connect to how the story was being told. So to me, there wasn't much of a story. The music part, I think people really can relate to. I think that's probably what Betty Doe relates to.
Well, with
absolutely.
Betty Jo's listeners, all you have to do is bring up Mamma Mia, and you will get a firestorm of comments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think that's what makes it so interesting.
That's the fun part.
And I know, and Mamma Mia was so much fun. I cannot believe, I say this every week, but I can't believe that our time is almost up. So, Howard, I just want to tell you thank you very, very much
for taking informative.
Very, very.
And let me just say one. If people want to find out more about my work and what I do in the book, it's just drgluss.com is my website, drgluss.com.
I urge everyone to please go to that website, and you'll find out lots of very fascinating information, and also some information about Dr. Gluss's own radio show, which has fabulous guests, and it's just a terrific show. So,
I look forward to that.
Absolutely. And so this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to all the folks at Blog Talk Radio for their help in connection with this show. Special thanks to Nikki Starr and Jazz Shaw for everything they do to make Movie Addict Headquarters so much fun. And, of course, to Dr. Howard Gluss for sharing his fascinating insights and opinions with us today. Thanks also to everyone who listened live or to the archives or took part in the chat. Your participation is greatly appreciated. I hope you know that. Please come back next Tuesday, March 17th, when our guest will be none other than the one and only Cloris Leachman, an Oscar-winning actress with over 200 films and TV appearances to her credit. In the meantime, remember to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. As usual, to close the show, here's the talented A.J. Daniels with a song we dedicate to all our loyal Blog Talk Radio listeners.